Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's up, y'all? This week on the pod, I'm talking with friends of mine called Cara Dillon and Sam Lakeman. It's a change to the advertised schedule, but I can do that because it's my pod. We did have legendary photographer and filmmaker Danny Clinch planned for this week, but he's working on something awesome that we can't talk about right now. And I know you want to hear about it, so I made the executive decision to hold off on that episode. Trust me, it'll be worth it. So back to my guests this week. Cara and Sam are award-winning folk musicians with over 40 years in the music biz between them and a global following. We get into it about the changing state of the music biz today. Do you feel like a running thing is happening here? Because I do. Cara's upbringing in Northern Ireland and how that influenced her music, technology, and navigating the modern world as a parent. Sam does a great child-friendly sound check at the start. You should check it. And room service busts in about 5 minutes in, wondering what the hell we're doing. But it's kind of funny, so we kept it in because it's real. And I got a heads up for you on that merch giveaway, y'all. I've been thinking about it. I'm extending it for another week. You got another week to get your name and email address entered over at HueyMorgan.com to be in a chance to win a bunch of dope Huey merch, including an exclusive Huey t-shirt, an exclusive hashtag the People's Champ hat. No one has these yet. To hot off the press for you. But only if you sign up at HueyMorgan.com, so do that. We also got some signed prints of my good self and signed copies of my book, Huey Morgan's Rebel Heroes, to give away. So do it. One more week. No catch. Just cool free shit, yo.
Can you speak a little bit, Cara?
How's it going? Can you hear me? What's it like? Is it all good?
I think it's kind of like, yeah, I think it's good.
Okay.
And Sam?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I'm going to just put a little...
Penis, cock, penis.
Okay, for the children. All right, I'll just give you a little boost on the input level, but I think that's good. I'm kind of going to do this because then kind of...
Do you want to sit here, Pat?
No, you stay there.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Well, guys, before this actually starts, I do like an intro.
Yeah.
So Cara's obviously Cara and Sam's obviously Sam because one's a lady, one's a man. And I'm obviously the dude from New York. So it's good to have you with me. When I first spoke to you guys about doing this podcast, it was interesting for me because I was talking to you about, we were doing the school run together. I was talking to you about how you guys actually still sell CDs.
Yeah, we do.
And like we're putting out reissues of our vinyl and people are buying it. And we're like, holy shit. But it's almost the thing that really stumped me was how certain crowds of music fans will still buy stuff. And you were like, people buy my CDs all the time.
Yeah, we were on the road a lot, and we sell an awful lot of merch, a lot of CDs at gigs. I mean, our audience, admittedly, is a lot older. They're still in there. You know, everyone who comes to our shows is 35 plus, mostly.
So, but they've got money.
Yeah,
well, that's
got money.
The thing.
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
You know,
they're
prepared to... You know, buy the ticket and then stand for an hour afterwards and get a CD signed.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, like...
But also, they're creatures of habit. You know, they spent 20 years plus probably living with CDs as a format anyway. Mm. And vinyl before that, some of them. So they're used to going and buying a product and enjoying it. And they've got a CD player in their car. They might only have, you know, 25 CDs sitting on their shelf in their kitchen with a wee CD player there. And they're used to going... Making the Sunday roast and sticking on a thing or having a dinner party, that's still the way that they process and enjoy music.
Yeah.
So when we do a gig, you know, and we sell, you know, dozens or sometimes, you know, hundreds of CDs after a show, it's a really large part of of our career and our
sort I can't imagine not doing that.
No,
it wouldn't be great.
The thing that kind of baffles me is like I was because they do the radio shows in London. I go into London, I just check the charts, and I'm like, what is this? And then I look at who's selling what, and they're not really moving many units.
No,
they're streaming
huge quantities.
And so, like, if you stream, I think about 10 times, it counts as a buy, or 100 times, something like, or 50, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it's not actually purchasing something.
No.
And you're right about people digesting music different. I mean, and it might be a generational thing, but like you go to Sainsbury's now, and they have vinyl there. They have Duran Duran and Black Sabbath.
Yeah,
and,
you know, Winehouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
So it has a resurgence because the company that started putting out Demon was started putting out the Funnel of Criminals albums, like reprinting them, like the 20th anniversary of the first one. They're doing 100% Colombian. I was like, you guys really think this is going to make you any money? They're like, yeah. I was like, I'm rolling my eyes, like, okay, signing it for me, okay, man, good luck. Like,
there's a back end that's hard to quantify as well. When people own a product, it sits in their house and they talk about it and they you know, cherish it to a certain extent. You know, with vinyl, they cherish it a lot more than they would with CDs. But if it's sitting in someone's house, we found with one record we released back in 2008/9, we released this very acoustic, folksy record, and we put it out there, and we didn't do a very big push because it was the financial crash and all marketing, everything fell apart, and you know, no one knew if there'd be a music industry after the financial crash. It was crazy.
Well, there's always Vice, and you know, like I used to have a couple bars in Dublin, and when all that thing went down and Ireland was getting tanked, my partner's like, we're doing fine.
Yeah.
I was like, everybody's you know, just saying, oh my god, give me a bottle of whiskey, should have fucked up.
But like we put this record out, and it was, I think it's one of our best records, but we found that people were enjoying it at home, but they kept enjoying it. So we had this constant residual sales through online sales, through Amazon and HMV, of physical units. People were obviously going to dinner parties, obviously going out of people's houses, car sharing, listening to this music, enjoying it, and then going and ordering it themselves.
That's cool.
And those aren't the same people who stream.
Oh, no, we're fine, thanks.
Room service.
Room service.
No, was it room service or housekeeping?
I don't know.
Oh, let me get that. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, we're going to be at 2 minutes. We ain't doing anything. I'm just recording a little something. We'll be out in like a half hour or so.
Okay.
All right. Oh, sorry about that. All right. It's weird because you open up a hotel and they see more than one person. And they're like, one, two people, like, oh my God, what are they doing in there?
Yeah.
Thank you, Babby.
Not him again.
Not this dude. I mean, I had some history with this place before it was actually part of the Soho House back in the day. I'll tell you about it off the camera.
Yeah.
Off the camera.
They're watching us.
Yeah, they're in there. Yeah, but you're actually right with that. It's when people have something that they like, they're proud of it. They'll play it for their friends, especially music, because music is, you know, for lack of a better term, it's our lives, right? That's what we do.
Yep.
We'd be doing it if we didn't make any money anyway. That's what.
But I like.
Yeah, then
you know,
that's the thing when you find these little things that, like, because I thought that was super interesting, because bands like, I was talking about Bebe Noma, a heritage act kind of, we're doing heritage festivals. Those are good, because you do have younger people coming and checking out because they know the songs. But you have the older people, like you said before, that have, you know, they have careers, they have lives, they have a little extra money to spend,
and
they're not predisposed to go, you know what, I'm just going to stream that on my on my wireless device in my kitchen. You know, they'll be like, no, I'm going to buy a CD, put it in the CD player, or buy the record, put it on. Yeah. But I remember when I was a kid, you know, like I had like a job or whatever, or chores, I get like, you know, $5 a week from my mom, and I'd go buy a record with that, right? Or a 45 or whatever. Mm. So I wouldn't buy something unless I heard it, right? Yeah. Or I'd take people's advice.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, like, you'd actually ask people. There wasn't this kind of like, because we have a second brain, I think, like in this generation with like Google. So if you don't know anything, it's okay. Google will.
Yeah.
So you could be a dumb fuck. And all you gotta do is just go, well, I don't know that, but my Google does. And then because your phone's smart, you assume you're intelligent, which isn't the case. So a lot of stuff I don't really appreciate, but I do appreciate, you know, the old school way of, you know, putting on headphones, listening to music, closing your eyes, and then a movie starts. Mm-hmm. You know, that was really impressed upon me at a young age.
Yeah.
And I think that stays with you for your whole life. So if you are over a certain age, that's how you do stuff, right?
Well, it's like buying a book, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just love having something physical. Like, if I'm into something, I want the CD to be able to... It gives you a wee insight as to what the people are all about, really. And, like, we always try and put lyrics in and... You know, the artwork, there's a whole package there.
Yeah.
And it's really important.
Yeah.
Because it's belittling an artist, I think, if you're not, like, given a wee bit extra,
but,
you know, on
the
CD.
As a human, you're sort of investing emotion in the product as well, because you've made that choice to purchase it.
Yeah.
And even if someone gives you one as a gift, you're going to listen to it. You know, you can read anything online, like you said, but when you go to a bookshop and buy a book, yeah. you read that book and yeah. you process it and you savour it, and you might not like it and you might put it down halfway through, yeah. but you gave it a shot. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember hearing, what was it, this band Rockpile. It was Dave Edmonds and Nick right. Lowe. They put right. a record out, like one record out in the mid-80s sometime. And I bought the record, and I didn't get it the first time. But I couldn't go, fuck it, I'm just going to give it back, because I had already bought it. So my mind, I was saying to myself, oh, I didn't get it this time out.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep trying to get it. And then I started realizing, oh, yeah, it's like this. It's like, right. you know, he's doing this 50s throwback kind of Del Shannon thing. Yeah. Oh, I get it now. Yeah. But it took me a while.
If that was Spotify, good. You wouldn't have given yeah. it 5 minutes. You would have listened exactly. to it and skipped to the next playlist.
I learned more about myself doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, just as a person, like you get, okay, if I don't understand something right off the bat, like a book yeah. or whatever, yeah. you'll reread a page or read, you know, that's what your mind does to try yeah. to understand the world around you. And I think if you're just going, if the world doesn't understand me, fuck it, is yeah. not a great yeah. way to be nope. going out there, you know, because yeah. it doesn't really work out for you in the end.
But you're right. I think it might be a generational thing as well, because, you know, younger generations now, if the world doesn't meet their expectations, there's another version of the world. Yeah, they just fucking, they go to a different website, log in there and go, oh, that makes me feel normal.
No, yeah, that's me. That's yeah. so crazy and true. Yeah. It's weird because we got kids about the same age. Your yeah, boys yeah. are a little bit older. But it's one of those things, as a dad, you try to instill, or a mom more importantly, you try to instill, you know, keep the sensitivity in yourself, you know, because that's the thing, kids are super sensitive, and and like, if you want to be a good parent, you kind of have to be sensitive again too. Yeah. So I think we start opening up our heart and all these slings and arrows come back a second time, right?
That's right.
So I was thinking, like, even with the really young kids, they'll probably have the values that skipped this last generation. Like, the kids who are 20 now are just streaming and doing whatever. Yeah. I think the kids nowadays are into things that are more tactile.
Yeah.
Like everyone's learned a lesson, I think. From I kind of think it's a bit like a lost generation. It's really sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I've got nieces and nephews who are that age, who are in their 20s. Yeah. And, like, they're so obsessed with Facebook and like,
smartphones, and
you know, it's so scary.
We sound like complete.
I know,
look, I'm the first to admit that anything you've said, I've said that shit before. Yeah. I'll sit around and be like, these kids today. Yeah. In my day, you know, that's how I start sentences now, in my day or back in the day.
Yeah.
No, but I think you're right, though.
I think now our kids, like, we're aware of how it's all going fucking wrong, isn't it? And so we're all trying to not let that happen. And I think sometimes we're nearly going a wee bit
too
on the other side
way.
Of it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, no, you can't have the iPad. Why? Well, I don't know why. Just because I'm saying no. Yeah. Go outside and play on the trampoline. You know, get some fresh air or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why am I doing that again? Isn't this supposed to be good? I remember Elizabeth's teacher in reception at the first parent-teacher meeting.
Miss Fraley?
Yeah. And she goes, okay, so everything's fine, everything's cool, like, she's lovely, whatever. There's only one area that I think she really, really, you need to focus on this. And I'm like, what?
Don't say, like, computers.
Yeah.
They said the same shit to me about my
mouse.
I was like, this kid knows the four-finger program, swiping on an iPad, telling me he teaches me shit.
I know. Yeah. And then I'm like, do you know, I'm really not really that worried about that.
It's because y'all have PCs in this place. That's what it is.
Exactly.
Y'all got shitty PCs,
you
man.
You can't use the mouse.
The kid's rocking Apple, man. He knows what's up.
Yeah.
Better interface.
Voice commands.
Yeah, exactly.
All this mouse business.
Something was killing me yesterday. I was watching something with Kevin Hart on Netflix, and he said his dad was fucking with his iPhone. He was like, Cyrus. Cyrus, let me know the nearest pizza shop. Then it's like, excuse me, Cyrus?
Would be such a better name.
Oh, totally. You'd be the dude from the Warriors.
That's what.
Can you dig it? That guy.
Siri in Game of Thrones would be Cyrus.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, that's kind of like, that's how, you know, we kind of envision ourselves, like, kind of like getting our head around Siri or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids that are 20, they're so in a lot of ways, I think they're so caught up in the whole fucking technology of it.
Yeah.
And then kids that we have, the kids our age, are just like, this is just a tool to get me to where I need to go.
Yeah, there's no sort of sparkling, no bells and whistles to it.
It's just a key, man. It may be an electric key, but it's just a key. And that's kind of like, I think that's going
to
be good.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you turned up to a house and they've just invented stairs, and you go, I can go up and down here. And the next person goes,
in a circle, this is bugging me out. Like the, you know.
I don't know. But one thing we found with the older generations as well is that they've seen it all. You know, they were there when Bob Dylan first sang, you know, or went electric, and they saw the Beatles, or they might have seen Mark Knopfler, and, you know, they've seen and they've honed their taste.
And is that just the, what is it, so, the
Yeah, they just know their shit.
Yeah.
So when they come out to a gig and see us play, or when they want to purchase our music, they've made a very decisive choice, and they really know. And they've stand. It's them standing there and nailing their flag to a flagpole, and I feel so blessed when they do that. Mm. But it says something about them. So when they then buy it and take it home, it becomes part of their world.
Yeah. It's part of their lexicon, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Now, I wanted to ask you about when you were growing up, because you guys met when. But the thing is, your husband and wife, I might have said that in the intro, but yeah. It's true, your husband and wife.
Yeah.
And you guys, you were singing with your sisters, a little bit background?
Sort of. Yeah. I grew up in like a one-horse town in Northern Ireland, a wee place called Dungiven.
And Ungiven?
Like, Ungiven.
It's like a goddamn Western Ungiven.
Never done taking.
Clint Ungiven.
That's a great name.
We had two horses, we had
that
to eat one.
That sounds so much better. But like, honest to God, like music there, and I think, you know, in Northern Ireland, you know, obviously the whole 70s and all, but I was growing up in the 80s, and the culture there, everybody is clinging to every single bit of the tradition and culture because it's been threatened for years, you know, with the whole war.
Yeah.
And so, you know, every three times a week I'd be in the local pub when I was like 7 right through till I was 16 in the back room of a pub with a lemonade and a bag of crisps. And I'm surrounded by like old men, women, other youngsters, friends my own age at school. And we're all sitting there. I'm sometimes really bored, but excited because you're allowed to stay up late on school night with the bag of crisps and the lemonade. And you're listening to these old songs with old men with no teeth singing, you know, maybe somebody who's in their 80s. And you're, you know, looking back now, it was such a privileged upbringing. I just sat and soaked it all up, didn't even know what I was doing. And then everybody had to play something. And some of them were amazing musicians, and you just sit and look at them and go, oh my God, you know, you get goosebumps, somebody picking up a fiddle, and you'd be like, how did they make a jump and like come alive like that? And then they'd get to the youngsters in the crowd and they'd say, play a tune, Cara. And I'd pick up the fiddle and play a tune, and they'd say, would you sing a song? This would go on to like 2 in the morning. You'll be a wee in, you know. Yeah. And you sing a song because you've heard it so many times, you know it by osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even know what you're singing about. Some old man who's left and went to America, emigrated. But it's really, looking back now, that's who I am.
Yeah.
It has completely formed me as a person.
Yeah.
And you absorb all this shit and you don't even know you're doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were handed the fiddle, the whistle at school. You were taught a bit of the language. It was such a powerful tradition.
Mm. And, well, it was a living tradition, you know.
Yeah,
which is a bit different to this country where, I mean, it's you know, there's pockets of living tradition in this country still, but for the most part, it's a little bit like a perpetuated historical society. It's enthusiasts who are trying to continue this sort of lost heritage to a certain extent. I don't want to belittle it too much.
But I think that's kind of like, that says a lot about, like, you know, how people live their lives in general. I mean, I kind of imagine you guys are the type that would have your parents around your kids and have them learn from them kind of that kind of way. I think that's really important because it's in society, or I guess in culture now, which is kind of this weird flux. It seems that there's a lot of people who are in society now that think that everything happened before sucked.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So just let's cut it off. Yeah. Not even like Puff Daddy, who would take a disco song from 15 years ago and you know, and people listen to now Puff Daddy, huh? But like he did that and it was kind of like people were like, I never heard that song before, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it was a hit 15 years ago. Yeah. Like, oh, I don't listen to old stuff. And that's the thing, I think a lot of times, even with, like, you see what's going on in the music today, like, if you listen to, like, in this country, like, Radio 1 or some of the commercial, right, I can see where people are trying to be clever and going back and kind of just taking things, but I think sometimes they're taking the wrong idea.
Yeah.
And they're not taking the whole idea of what these guys are trying to do.
Remember all through the 80s and 90s, though, there was this, I remember discovering so many popular songs that were huge hits for contemporary artists. You know, it might have been your Take That and your Westlifes and or your whatever, but they were covering old Motown or soul numbers from the 60s and 70s, and they were doing them in a sort of contemporary pop way, and you thought it was a song of theirs. And then it was only, you know, years later, listening to Radio 2 in the daytime, you go, oh my God, that's the original from like 1965 or the 50s or whatever.
Now, when you were Northern Ireland, when you started, did you still go from like pubs to stage, like, pretty quick, or was it like a church thing?
No, it was, so when I was at secondary school, me and my two best friends at school, somebody came in one day and said, should we go, you know, tonight we're all playing music in the pub, how about, you know, do you fancy forming a band? And I was like, I don't know, and it was coming up to the summer, And, you know, there was lots of my friends were going to sort of pick tulips and stuff like that and earn money and
Was that a euphemism for something, you know, pick tulips?
Stacking turf, do you know what I mean? The fields, they would do that there. And then this friend, Rory of mine, he said, well, why don't we just go and play music and try and get, like, a gig at a festival or something? And I'm like, well, look, I'm up for it. If you just tell me if it works out.
So you're already playing fiddle pretty good. But you're playing pretty good, though. You were hanging out in the pubs with the old men. They were giving you some good tips.
You know, I did play it. And so next of all, he came in and he goes, right, you know, we're going to Scotland and we're going to England. And I'm going, this summer? And he goes, yeah, we've got like half a dozen festivals. And I said, how did you do that? And it turns out we called ourselves, wait for this. This will be interesting. How do you pronounce O-I-G-E?
O-I-G-E. Really, orgy? Really?
Well, no, it was actually called Oiga, right?
Oiga.
Which is Irish for youth. You know, he came up with this name. And we got booked. Everybody just thought, oh, these new kids Youngins. From Northern Ireland formed this folk super band, and like, we're going to book them. And we had never done a gig in our lives, but
Were your parents, were they musical?
No, not really. My grandmother would have been... She died when I was like three, but she was a singer, and they lived in the middle of a mountain, and they would have ceilidhs, and she would sing all these really old songs.
Did that allow your parents to go, yeah, you can go on tour?
Yeah.
Because I don't know what parents would be like. Yeah, go on tour. Yeah,
I can't believe looking back now, because I was a mistake in our family. I'm a baby out of six. You know, I was not meant to be here. You know,
you were the youngest of the family?
Yeah, my mother's 86 now, you know.
Oh, okay. My mom's 80, so I came a little bit late, but I was the only child. After me, they were like, no, you can't have
it. But, you know, I remember saying, okay, so we're going to go to England and, you know, what do you think about that? And she went, you'll be all right. You're along with Rory and Mara O'Kane, and they're fantastic. And as long as you behave yourself and we'll see. And they were so trusting. But I think they kind of knew you. I was all right.
Yeah, you weren't going to put foot wrong.
I guess we're not that different from when we were kids as adults. If anything, we've been tempered a little bit. But,
yeah.
Maybe, I mean, you're probably the same cool person then. So your parents are like, man, they're cool. So you can kind of tell if your kids are going to hang or going to go completely
gone. Yeah, you kind of know. But anyway, so we went and did that. And then at the end of that summer, this German who lived in the town, was a bit of a elder, he said, I've put together a tour for you in Germany.
Damn.
And I was like, really? And so the next holiday, like, that there was, like, East or whatever it was,
summer
or Easter holidays, we went for like 2 months. To Germany.
Really?
And we played sold out shows in these underground clubs, and people were, you talk about buying, it was tapes.
Yeah.
Cassette tapes. They were flying off the shelf, and he was making a fortune.
So he wasn't that crazy like a fox, right?
You got ripped.
So we I put in my time doing all that, but I loved it. It was just playing music, and it was so like,
hey, back then, look, you know, there was no internet. You know what it's like. I'd turn out on the road with my brothers, and we went out when my older brother was 17, so I would have been 15, 16, and my youngest brother would have been 14. We'd go for 7 weeks through the summer holidays on tour.
So you guys, did you guys have like a similar upbringing?
Yeah. My parents were musical, so they were part of the 60s folk scene. So they were resident singers at the Herger Folk Club in London, which was a really famous one. You know, my dad lived in a flat next to Jackson C. Frank. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, he used to run folk clubs in Devon. Yeah, so they knew it all. And when they ran clubs and did gigs down in Devon, where I grew up, you know, we'd have Martin Carthy or Fairport staying with us. And so just music was just there all the time. But they never really forced it on us. It was just the osmosis thing. Music was around. It was just formed part of the landscape. So when we started playing and we started realising we can make some money at the folk clubs, we'd just disappear off and do the festivals. But
so then this is when it gets weird. So we're doing a gig with my little band, Oiga.
Sorry, I thought there was an R in there. I don't mean
in London.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the night, Sam and his brothers turn up because they're doing a gig somewhere.
We were doing another gig in London.
We were 19.
Well, I was doing my A-levels. So 18. Yeah. 18. So I remember we said, Oiga are playing in North London at the Irish Centre. Harassing the girl. And so we drove across London after our gig, thinking there might be a session afterwards.
Oh, yeah?
Right enough, there was a music session.
So that was the idea. You guys want to come and hang out
and
jam.
Play music together, yeah. So we did that.
There used to be that. Remember that? I didn't, like, the community of folk music seems a lot better than the community what I was involved in. Because it was like, I remember when we first started playing, we were kind of playing around New York, and we were hanging out with like hardcore bands. We were playing with hardcore bands, so you couldn't jam at hardcore.
No.
Can't sit around in the living room and be like, one, two, three, four. You know, still work. But this sounds like it's like, so that's how you guys actually met.
Yeah, that's it.
And that was it.
Actually, I tried giving her the eyes across this crowded bar.
That wasn't working.
There were lights, man.
Bad, man. Just brick wall.
And then that's it. And then I joined a band that him and his brothers were in. And then we left that and pursued our own thing.
Yeah. We got signed.
Got signed to Warner's End. Yeah. And we've been together doing music ever since. So.
That's pretty cool that you guys can work together, because Becky and me are just starting to work together. Oh, hold on a second. Oh.
Yeah.
She's my manager. So
it's kind of. She was saying, yes.
Yeah, because when I met her, she was. Well, I think you know the hip hop DJ agency she had.
Yeah.
And she was at like everybody. And like, you know, I remember. Also, it's like no one really cares as much about what you do unless they're in it with you. And I think that's cool that you guys can do that together.
Like the shared experience means everything.
And you're both, you know, you're fighting from the same page. You're just going to be motivated together. Yeah. And you want it to work.
Yeah. Like Ozzy and Sharon. That was the one that Becky said. Yeah. I was like, oh
gosh.
And not great.
I was like, really? Like Ozzy and Sharon, baby girl? Okay. Maybe not that.
Okay, you be Ozzy.
Don't go anywhere. Stay locked on Huey Off the Record.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, as you guys started playing together, especially with the way, I guess within the last, 15 years, there's been that kind of emphasis on... I think like almost people are digesting music differently. They don't have CD players. Not a ritual anymore, right? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like disposable stuff. People, I mean, I talk to younger people, I should say, and they're talking about, oh, what's your Spotify playlist? I was like, what do you mean, what's my Spotify playlist? Like, they roll their eyes like this dude. But it's like one of those things where, you know, if I want to put a playlist together, I'm adept enough on my computer to make a playlist in my iTunes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that's as far as I may burn a CD. And they're like, burn a CD? I was like, yeah. I mean, you know, put them in the car. You know, I have a little auxiliary jack, but I barely do that, you know.
But it's also, you know, we find an awful lot of the labels. I mean, we sort of subcontract an awful lot of, you know, distributors and marketing people and social media.
Because you run the label,
right? Yeah, we run our own label. Yeah, so
that's a pretty...
And we've worked, you know, we were signed to Rough Trade for 10 years and we were with Warner's for years. So we know the industry, you know. And we still work with a lot of industry people. And we see them chasing this streaming and chasing this digital media like it's some kind of... last ditch hope at making any
monetizing. Well, the thing is, the younger kids, we talked about this before, when they do the 360 deal, like some guy was telling me, hey, I'm getting this major label interest. I was like, don't sign a 360 deal. And he texted me back, like, they want to sign this. I was like, don't do it.
But like, we exist in this, it's almost like a black market. We exist in this totally invisible part of the music industry where people still buy music. They still pay good money to come and see live music all the time. And the people who come and see us, you know, they're not particular. Yeah, they might go and see, you know, they might be at the Ed Sheeran gig at the NEC on Friday, and then they might come and see a folk band called Leverett in a small convent, or they might go
it's
and see...
It's a spice of life, man. You don't have to be like a one type of person. I think the companies now, because they're so scrambling and almost desperate, they don't... they don't really know who their customers are. Yeah. They just assume their customers are 15.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's not going to work.
Because they've got more money. Yeah. And they're not used to paying for anything.
Well, they get their parents to buy them a concert ticket or something like that. Yeah. That doesn't work out. And I mean, I'm kind of in the similar boat where, you know, people who like my stuff and like your stuff, you know, they've been with you for a while.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they'll come see you play. Yeah. You know, if you're going to play a festival, they'll buy a festival ticket because they'll be like, hey, there's a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
I like a bunch of different stuff. I like your stuff. I like Black Sabbath. I like everything in between, if there isn't in between, you know what I'm saying? I think most people are like that with music.
Yeah.
Yep.
And like, especially, I was surprised how my radio show keeps getting renewed every year. Because I'm like, there's no rhyme or reason or algorithm.
It's amazing. We love listening to your radio show because you're not getting one thing.
Yeah, well,
that's the thing. It's
once
amazing.
I realize that if I'm doing two songs in a row that are similar, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. Kick
but tell me this, do you have any CDs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of CDs.
You kept them.
Yeah, and also because the car that we have is a CD, like, you know, because kids have those freaking story CDs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I try to do is I try to burn CDs on Becky's computer. I send her files, burn the CDs, and then stick them in the car so I don't have to listen to Topsy and Tim.
Yeah.
You know, because Topsy and Tim come on, you're like, here's Marvin Gaye. You know, it's Marvin Gaye's Trouble Man soundtrack. Right. Listen to that, you know.
Yeah.
We had a funny one recently. One of our twin boys is 10, and he's just started guitar lessons few months ago, and we took him down to the local music shop in town and for his first lesson. Well, you took him, didn't you, Cara? And as you were walking out the door, you said you just heard the guitar teacher say to him, so Noah, do you want to do like acoustic guitar or rock guitar? And Noah said, rock guitar, like this. And so now we've got this, you know, he's into Royal Blood and he just wants to hear rock guitar on everything. So, you know, we're trying to put on a bit of music that we want to enjoy, and he's like, no, can we just stick on some more rock guitar, man? I want to hear AC/DC again.
I get the same shit. What I do is I try to educate him. Like, when he was in the womb, we used to play all types of music, figure out what he liked.
Yeah.
When he came out, the one song that will stop him is Thelonious Monk's Blue Monk. He goes like that. Whenever he comes out, he just turns and looks at the sky like, what's going on? But he is attracted to rock music. I try to play the Trouble Man soundtrack. It was a good thing. And, you know, because we're musicians, we try to fuck with him a little bit. We're like, all right, so what do you hear? He's like, vocals, piano, violins doing like a string line and some bass guitar. Can I listen to Rage Against the Machine now? So it's like he's doing what I'm asking him to do. So I guess I can't complain. I gotta play Rage Against the Machine.
Hey,
but they know what they're
into.
They know. It's just instinctive, isn't it? What they are drawn towards.
We had this really fascinating experience with the twins when they were born. And we were on tour promoting the fourth album, After the Morning, or the third album. Mm-hmm. And Cara was pregnant with the twins all the way through touring, and the doctor said,
"Right, tough."
Yeah,
he was like, "Twins, I'm going out on the road.
Stop touring at 6 months and take the last 3 months off." And like the day before the last gig, Cara went into labour on stage at a concert, and so the babies were in the womb listening to the monitors, you know, of the music.
This modern mix sucks. We're out of here.
so they were born.
Who's this modern engineer? We gotta go.
That's it. I don't like this anymore. So they were born really prematurely and spent 4 months in hospital. But the doctors would cover up their incubators and play the album to the babies, and we would watch their heart rates and blood saturation level out and stabilize.
Yeah, with music.
They would do it for an hour every day because they couldn't do it to all the other children as well. And it was absolutely magical to watch.
That's amazing. It's also your mom's voice, right?
All they'd heard.
It was a new
songs,
experiment they were doing to see, you know, and then they said, this is perfect because, I mean, they've obviously been listening to music intensely since they were conceived. So, I mean, you've got to, like, let us do this. And I said, go for it.
Yeah.
And I said, I feel really sorry for any other babies in this world because they're all going to become, like, folky. And they're not going to know why.
You know, shit could be worse. They could listen to Drake or someone like that. You know, like, oh. See, like, a lot of these people, I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, like, Becky will go to, like, get gas somewhere. She'll come out with, like, one of those Grazia magazines and Poor Angelina Jolie and her $25 million house with Brad Pitt's got to get split, whatever. But they got all these people, these musicians in there. I'm like, who's this guy Future?
Yeah.
Ooh, who's this guy Drake? And I'm like, I'll go check this shit out on YouTube or whatever. I'm like, oh my God, they're completely horrible.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. Am I getting to be, am I an old knucklehead? And I'm like, no, I'm not an old knucklehead.
No,
I just
know
what
like.
Good music is.
Exactly.
No, but I know what good music is. I think it's kind of like, maybe it's perspective or life experience.
I think
or whatever.
It's that as well. Because I'd go visit my granddad, you know, before he passed on, and he would always be playing. He was a big band freak.
Mm-hmm.
And right enough, every single bit of vinyl he's stuck on his thing now is an absolute classic.
Yeah.
But at the time, when I was listening to Mars,
take the
A
train out of here. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was listening to, you know, early Rave,
volume,
yeah, that was the first vinyl I bought.
Yeah.
I bought the volume by Mars.
Yeah, man.
you know, I was like, God, that's just so old fashioned and crap.
Yeah.
But no, it's not. It's absolute classic stuff.
But also the theory in that is, like, we're talking about Mars. It's kind of that. It's kind of the same kind of theory behind it, where you stack certain frequencies and, you know, different melodies counteract. I you know, especially when I was young, it was like The Clash and hip hop and like, and funny enough, Van Halen. So like, if people say, what were you listening to as a kid? I was listening to punk music, hip hop music, and Van Halen music, which is completely bizarre, right?
It's a weird mix.
It's a, I have a picture of me in like my first gig ever at like Xavier High School's talent show, because the singer in this band I had called Sudden Death. It's just a picture. I've got a red bandana around my neck, no shirt, a leather, take a second, a leather members only jacket.
Nice.
Gray parachute pants, like those little kind of ballet shoes, dude. No, they
ballet
were late. Not ballet shoes.
Yeah, okay.
But Capizio. But Capizio was like those 80s kind of like Duran white kind of booty things. But I was playing a Les Paul custom, because this friend of mine lent me his guitar. I was like, don't matter what you're wearing, you're playing a Les Paul custom.
That's it.
So that's how things get cool again. But it is one of those things where I found like a common thing. That's cool. All right. I found a common thread between all three of those things.
Yeah.
And it was. You know, it was attitude, I think, to a certain extent.
Well, maybe you can't even, like, with music, sometimes it's hard to articulate is you're finding
it. But also, if you can explain it in words, then it's not that profound. Because sometimes only music can change shit like that.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I got frustrated when I first got into the music business. Probably you guys have the same thing. I want to talk to you about it. Was when people say to you, oh, what's the new record like? And you're like, fuck, you really want me to do your job for you, don't you?
Well,
music journalists are like the laziest ones ever, you know.
Oh, we've had so many people, like, do you remember that time there was a quote that was taken and they had lifted it from another quote and they had actually done it wrong?
No, it was one of the national mags. It was like Q or Mojo, and the very first review of this particular album, they had misquoted, which often happens with one of my brothers, Sean or Seth, and they'd misquoted saying Cara's husband Seth Laidman is on the da, 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 da. And somebody just lifted that same, like, just totally paraphrased, just lifted it and stuck it in another review,
cut and pasted
it, and I was like, you're not even doing your job, just read the other fucking review and just copied it. Like, for God's sake, you're copying the mistakes, man. So,
Like, they always say, like, those who can do, those who can't are music journalists. And I totally think that's awesome and true.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember when I was coming up, there's a band called Gay Dad.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Gay Dad? Now, Gay Dad, this is really bugged out. It's a weird story. The only reason I know who Gay Dad is because there was, like, a cover of Melody Maker that we were going to be on.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, Gay Dad was going to be on it. I was at EMI in London. They were like, Hugh, we got a problem. You got to come in the office. I was like, who died? And they're like, no, we just need to talk, you know, brainstorm. So I was like, you guys don't need me to brainstorm. Oh, we want you to come in, please.
Yeah, yeah.
So I come in, I'm like, you know, I'm jet lagged, what do you guys want? And they're like, well, we have this problem with Melody Maker. And I was like, what's the problem? Like, they're not putting you on the cover. I was like, we'll live.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, no, well, then the press person's like, no, this is something that you can help. And I was like, what do you want me to do?
Wow.
Like, you can call the editor of Melody Maker and explain to them why you should be on the cover. So I was like, why am I going to be on the cover? Because this band, Gay Dad.
Yeah.
I was like, what kind of name is that?
Yeah.
Gay Dad. And they were like, well, it's self-explanatory. It's like being irreverent to gay people and fathers. I was like, oh, it's okay.
Fine.
So I was like, all right, and who's this? And like, why would they name themselves Gay Dad? And the guy's like, well, the guy who sings is the music journalist. I was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
I was like, don't you guys get it? Don't you see this big picture here? Like, they're hooking up their boy because he's a music journalist. He probably wrote for them. They're like, yeah, but if you call up the editor, I was like, you know what? I don't give a fuck. Give me the phone. I said, call up this dude. I get him on the phone. I'm like, what's up, man? It's you. He's like, can I help you? I was like, yeah, man. Yo, why are you putting this knucklehead Gay Dad on the cover of the magazine?
Yeah.
You know they're not going to be around next year. What are you talking about? And the guy's like, I guarantee you, Huey, that they'll be bigger than you are next year. I was like, all right, I guarantee you, if that is not the case, I'm going to come to your office and slap you in the back of the head. guy was like, deal, Huey, and hung up the phone. And the record company people looked at me like, that didn't help. And I was like,
you asked me to
come in, I'm jet lag, you know, probably wearing off a couple Valiums too at the time, you know. But anyway, so a year later, I'm at the Oxygen Festival in Hyde Park, right? Hey, Melody Maker, want to do an interview? I was like, well, tell them to do an interview with fucking Gay Dad, right? Because they pretty much came and went, like, within a couple months, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not kind of like one of those guys, but it's nice to gloat when you're right. So the guy who's, they have like a little, one of those little porta cabins, and like every, you know, and Melody Maker have their own one.
Yeah.
So I went in, right, opened the door, like, boom, everyone's like, huh. I was like, where's Gay Dad? And they're like, they're not here. I go, they're nowhere.
Thank you very much.
And then the dude, who I never met him, but the dude who's the editor, gets up and walks out of the other door. I'm like, who's that guy? They're like, oh, like, dude, and I was like, is that the guy? And they're like, So that turned out to be the guy. He actually took off. He ran. He actually thought I was going to assault him.
Beat on him.
So I just let that kind of lie. I was like, let him think that every time he sees me. He's...
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird because, like, when people try
I can
to...
be honest and say we never had brushes quite like that.
Oh, we used to do crazy... I mean, we used to do crazy shit. But that was because, the thing was, when you know you're making music that is right from your heart and everybody tries to screw with it.
Yeah.
In this day and age with the whole like TV show talent thing, I feel bad for kids who actually feel something here in their heart for music because what can they actually do with it that doesn't compromise their integrity?
I know.
Because it sounded like you guys actually came up keeping it here.
But people try to break it from us. I remember one time this very famous record producer tried to turn Cara against me in the middle of like an 8-week session and ended up going out and buying all this medication and tried to convince you to give me all this weird kind of herbal remedies and medication because I was psychotic.
He took it out of our,
it was part of our record budget.
Oh, really? Here's $20,000 worth of supplements. Yeah, please get your psychotic
medication.
He arrived in and he had been kind of like, for days and days he kept going, you don't need him. You stick with me, okay? You don't need Sam, okay?
And you're sitting there where does this dude live?
And he said, you know, he's kind of mentally unhinged. And I'm like, I don't think so. And I says, you know, like me and Sam have known each other since we were like, you know.
Young.
And he's like, no, I'm seeing something here that you don't see. And he said, I'm going to be back in a couple of hours. And he landed back with this big brown bag. And he said, look, you know, I've went out and I've told this person that I know, my man, all Sam's personality and his little like weird
thing.
And he said, things that make Sam together. Sam make you a cool dude. Let's get rid of all that.
Yeah.
Let's turn you into some like zombie, right?
I've got all these potions for him to take. Can you make sure he takes them?
I'm like,
and then dump his ass, basically.
You know, I love my wife too, but she came with potions. I wouldn't take them. I've been married 10 years. I wouldn't take them.
The same guy turned up a couple of weeks later and bought Cara a guitar, classical guitar, for her birthday.
Right? Oh, I think he had a little different thing on there.
Yeah, but
probably want to get rid of you for
3 months visit. Later, that turns up on the record advance as well.
Oh,
recording budget to buy
a Conran Vaz for you.
And a Conran Vaz for me.
See, I don't even feel bad about the shit I did to EMI. Like, I did this thing, we were touring with U2. We were about to go on tour with them, right? Yeah. And I had a little puppy. Right. And I was like, I went up to the head of my record, this guy, David Segerson, who was a record producer, so they're all a little bit aloof. But he was cool. And he was like, hey, you know, I was like, you know, I got to do something with my dog, man.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, well, I know I guess it's a kennel that also teaches you dog shit. And I was like, cool, man, how much is that? He's like, well, how long are you on the road for? I was like, 3 months. He's like, all right, well, we'll put it down there for 3 months. And it's probably $1,000 a month. So here's a check for $3,000. I was like, non-recoupable. He's like, non-recoupable. I was like, cool. I went out, I cashed that check and spent it, right? Right? I brought the dog to the kennel, went out on tour, came back, picked the dog up there, like, yo, where's the money? I was like, you billed David Segerson at EMI Records, right? Boom. Did not give up. You know, I didn't give a damn back then. So, he calls me into the office one day. Oh, he didn't call me. He just called me up one day. He's like, this is at my phone rings at home. It wasn't like mobile phone time. I was like, hello. He's like, hey, Huey, what's up? I was like, hey, Dad, what's going on? He goes, hey, man, trying to be real cool about it. Didn't want to be like, yo, you robbed me, dude.
Yeah.
But he was like, hey, so what happened with that? I was like, I spent it. He's like, oh, okay, cool. I was like, because I just had to, to spend some more money on your dog. I was like, that's cool. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, man.
And he was just like, okay. All right, bye. And because, you know, the whole thing was like, what's $3,000 to a guy who's like, we were also said we'd gone gold in America with the single for, so it's like 500,000 copies of a single to happen. But it was kind of cool because I think to myself, you know, like as years go by, like, oh man, should I have done that shit?
Well,
maybe I shouldn't have. And I think, nah, fuck it.
And you know what? You were teaching him a lesson.
Yeah.
You should have known better to lend you money.
You shouldn't have produced that Bangle song and then thinking you could run a record label, because I think that's his production thing.
It?
But it's also like, you know, stuff like that. I mean, our side, the artists actually screwing the record company over, those stories are very few and far between. Like, it's always the other way around. I mean, especially when, you know, like when we did our record, we were talking about doing like artwork for the record, right? The first record, we recorded it in 5 days because we thought the record company was going to change their mind. We're three knuckleheads from New York. These guys are EMI. They're going to freaking change their mind. So we recorded quick, but we spent like 3 months putting the album together, the artwork,
because
it was so important.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why people take a year to do records now, because there's not any... All they got to do is just go in there and essentially just record their vocal with most cases.
Yeah, exactly. Funny, we're just about to start recording another album. Like,
oh,
just
cool.
Any day, like, hopefully. Yeah. And we've got all our stuff organized, and you know, there's always this wee kind of thing at the back of my head, like, I'm really happy with something, and then I'm like, I wonder, are we doing the right thing here? And then, like, Sam always points out, like, do you know what? Who gives a shit? You have to just do what you like. Yeah. And you, if we like it, somebody else will like it. Yeah. And that's all that's important.
Well, the thing is also, yeah, if you like it, people can see the integrity in that.
Yeah.
And that's really, that's gold nowadays.
It becomes a lot more believable. There's so much more emotion. It's just a better product when you can do that. If you can get...
But there was years and years and years when we were saying to, like, Rough Trade and Warners and all, where, you know, we would... believe in something and we'd bring them a song
and they'd crap all over
and they'd be just like
sometimes they weren't even meaning to crap on it. They just say things, very insensitive
yeah. things.
I think fox amongst the chickens you just throw it in there and then suddenly your head's fucking spinning and you're going we made all the wrong decisions, we've got to go back and change it.
There's some knuckleheads working in the record business, and the people I've found that are actually good at doing that kind of stuff are gone because there's no money in it. Smart people don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You get the people who want to be like the knucklehead in Vegas at the club buying bottles. I'll be a record company executive, but there's nothing in it money-wise. Oh, the fringe benefits are great, you know, so.
Well, we were quite lucky. You know, when we were first signed, we were picked up by Jeff Travis at Rough Trade, and, you know, the integrity he has for music is... almost second to none.
Yeah, no, see, that's a good place to go.
It is good. Although he did see us, he knew that we didn't quite know where we settled and where we fitted in music, so he kept putting us in touch with various strange left-field songwriters, producers, whatever, engineers and things to work with and to see if we could find ourselves. We didn't quite know that was his master plan, so we thought each one was something he really wanted us to do, so we threw ourselves life and soul into it, and then... when it didn't work out, he was like, oh, that's fine, we'll just try another one. And we were like, no, totally devastated.
But you guys, you produce your own stuff now, right?
So, I've done for years.
Yeah, so the deal now is, right, if you are someone who has an idea on what they're doing and the technical ability to run Pro Tools to a certain extent, right, you can just make your own record. You don't need a label, you don't need a producer, you don't need... So for the most part...
Well, I'd argue that an awful lot of artists need a producer.
Yeah, no, that's the case, yeah.
So that's a big... I mean, I see so many artists who have talent to a certain degree, their strengths lie in certain places, but they feel like, A, they have to do everything, and B, everything's expected of them. Mm-hmm. So they have to make the record, record the record, do the artwork, sell the record.
I'm Prince, goddammit.
And it's like, do you know what? No. You know, Bob Dylan didn't book his backing band when he went into the studio. The producer did that. You know, when Simon and Garfunkel heard Bridge Over Troubled Water, the first time they heard the drums and strings was on the bloody radio.
Yeah,
it all happened in the background. You know, some of the greatest decisions ever made are not made by the artist. Mm. You've got to see where the jewels lie, and then you've got to, you know, figure out how to make it the best setting.
Like, when we first started, we thought we needed a producer. And, the short version is we demoed up a couple things, sent to this guy Bob Power, who produced Tribe Called Quest and D'Angelo and different stuff we liked, because we were a rock band, but we wanted like some hip hop low end, right? The dude came back in front of the whole board at EMI, because we had an 8-record deal with EMI, so we were trying to set a precedent. And the guy was like, he stood up, he's like, they don't need a producer, they need an engineer. They need a great engineer. And, like, you know, being with a big label, they do take care of certain things like booking studios and that kind of shit, which is great. Product managers, right?
Yes, of course.
The unsung heroes of the record business. The guy's like, hey, I'm just waiting for you to put out a good record.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, thanks, man. No ulterior motive? None.
No.
You're like, all right, cool.
Just do a good job.
Yeah, just do what your heart says. You know, like, wow, you don't get paid by the record. Yeah. Anyway, so we went in there and we were kind of said, all right, now, especially by Bob Power kind of vindicating us, saying like, yeah, you just go in there and do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Having an engineer at that point who was the guy who was like, look, I love what you guys are doing, but I'm going to tell you when the song's finished. You know, because you can, especially if you're in a huge studio and there's no one checking you.
Yeah.
But I think a large extent, a lot of new artists try to do all that stuff because they don't want to pay anybody. And then I think it lessens their output, you know, because if they're concentrating on all this shit, like, I want to know what my social media status is, and I also want to know where my Uber is, and I also want to, it's like, you're not paying attention to your music.
That's it. That is such an important point.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was great hanging with you guys, man.
Hey, man.
You too. Great.
Yeah.
It was a good podcast, I think.
I think we covered a lot of ground.
I think we got some stuff.
We shared.
We did. Well, I think that's what it's about, really. Hanging out and just talking.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the new record.
Yeah, it's a bit different, doesn't it? We're going really stripped back here.
Oh, so just like acoustics and
really, super retro, really, like, and like maybe one guitar and vocal. We've never done that.
Are you going to be doing fiddle as well?
I don't think I'll do that.
No, I think I'm going to
Yeah, just the new thing now is you just set up one mic and everybody just does it like they're doing it in front of people.
I know, I still have a little bit of the old hi-fi quality.
Yeah, isolation is not a bad thing. Yeah. We're about to go in Thursday. We're at the Gibson studio, which apparently they...
Oh, yeah, London.
Which is really nice. So they kind of go, can only play Gibsons. I was like, only play Gibsons, so we're good.
We did an album launch there once.
Oh, really? Is it cool? Good studio?
Some great guitars.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the deal. I'm like, I'm not bringing shit, you know? I'm going out and maybe walk out with something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but getting back in the studio is always a good feeling because I haven't been with the Criminals in the studio for fucking 7-8 years or something, so I didn't even think this day would come. It was one of those things where
that's amazing though, wasn't it?
Yeah,
but it always happens at the right time, I think.
Yeah.
I always get really panicky. Sam's very chilled out about it, but every time like we've done an album, I'm like, oh, fuck, what are we going to do next? I have no idea, like I don't know what we're going to do, because I don't know, there's different directions you can take what we do, and you know, you can kind of make it a bigger sound with like lots of people, and you know, and then we write some of our own stuff, and then sometimes I'm not confident to put it on. But like, I got really, really itchy a couple of months ago. I just said to Sam, do you know what? You know, I've written this song and I just want to record it, and we're just going to put it out there and just see what happens. And if we like it, somebody else will like it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I'm over it. Maybe it's because I'm older or something.
Sometimes you just got to take a step.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, a lot of times you do get to a point where you can't give a shit anymore because it's getting in the way of your creative process. You know?
That's true.
If I'm worrying about what some guy's going to think after I do something that I haven't done,
exactly. You know? Yeah. You never get anywhere. You're chasing your tail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it'll be good. Exciting.
Yeah, I got to check out that studio. Okay, well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, we got a lot of stuff here. Yeah, we got 45 minutes.
I could listen to your stories, like, all day.
I could listen to yours all day, too.
I hope you enjoyed that. Kara and Sam are very cool people. You should check out their website. And hey, go old school. Buy CDs of theirs. You can tweet about it afterwards. Talking of Twitter, a lot of you have been asking for my next week's guest up on my social media, and it's my man from New York City, my man King. Yes, the Abominable Showman. He's a bandmate, one of my best friends in the world, the one you want to hear tales of old New York from, for real. Get your ears ready for this one, folks. It is interesting to say the very least. So until next time, don't forget to subscribe to the pod. That way you'll never miss an episode. And be nice, leave us one of them 5-star reviews while you're at it up on iTunes. And until next time, y'all stay classy.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.